south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, if you remember last week, I started with a question and an email. People occasionally ask me if I ever get in trouble for the things I say, and do Latins down here in Latin America get upset or irritated when I talk about the gringo advantage and how hard I sometimes come down on Latins when I talk about how lax they are with the details. Well, you know, you could sum it up by saying that Latins love everything and anything first world and gringo, and they tolerate people who are rough on them like me because, well, when you're off the tourist trail anyway, any gringo has the gringo advantage. You know, I often say being off the tourist trail down here is like being a B-grade rock star. You get invited to all the backstage parties, but no one really knows your name. Well, that's perfectly all right with me, and it should be with you, too. And as one longtime expat said, being off the gringo tourist trail is exactly the opposite of what it was like for him when he was in high school up in the States. A guy that just blended in with the woodwork. He remembers it was kind of a thrill in high school, and one of the jocks or one of the cool kids playing in a band or whatever said hi, or maybe even acknowledged him by name in the hallway, or got to sit next to the guy at a game, a dance, or a party. Like he said, even if the cool guy was really a jerk, you couldn't help but want to sit next to him and be his friend. So yes, to answer that question, the gringo advantage works for all gringos, even part-time jerks like me. And by the way, when finishing up, I remembered a pertinent story, which brings up another question. People always ask me, Johnny, are you ever going to run out of stories? Nope, not when I've got friends like Expat Eddie and Captain Mango. Anyway, to finish off last week's topic, people ask me, Johnny, has anyone ever tried to censor you? You know, tone you down, force you into a groove, whatever. Here's what I have to say about that. Yes, people have tried. In fact, before you knew me as kindly, good-hearted Johnny Mueller, host of The Expat Files, living in Latin America, I did a lot of radio and a little TV in Latin America. I mean, I was the morning drive-time gringo voice in Costa Rica, Guatemala, Panama, Colombia, and syndicated throughout Latin America, too. And I did a stint for a couple of years as the afternoon drive-time gringo voice, too. Way back when I started in Latin radio, except for Costa Rica and Panama, I was heard way off the gringo tourist trail. But it was a huge market. I mean, there's cities down here that have 5, even 10 million people. Huge cities where you could walk all day and not see one gringo. And back then, gringos stationed in Latin America were just starved for gringo radio. And though 10 or 15 years ago, everyone up north could get streaming radio by the internet, down here at that time, the internet was in its infancy and no one streamed radio yet. So gringos living in Latin America or stationed in Latin America at embassies or whatever had to get their dose of gringo radio live or syndicated. And back then, in all the major cities, there was at least one big FM station that had a gringo voice like mine just for 2 or 3 hours during drive time, blathering on about all things Latin and gringo. Anyway, 10 or so years ago, I worked a long time for a very big radio station chain in Latin America that was owned by a Korean family, and the boss spoke no English. And believe me, when he tried to speak Spanish, he slaughtered that too. So as you might have figured, there was absolutely no censorship. I could say and do as I pleased, cut up on all the pretentious, snot-nosed rich people and their kids, and rip on the military and the embassies and all the pustulant political pinheads with impunity. Now there's a descriptive turn of phrase for you. I think I'll write that down. Now this rich Korean guy who owned, I think it was 36 radio stations in Latin America, including a bunch of evangelical Christian ones, if you could believe that. I mean, this guy had a statue of Buddha on his desk. Nope, not the Bible. I guess if it works and makes money, anything goes, right? Anyway, this rich Korean guy, I think he was in his 60s, had 3 daughters. He sent them to universities up in the States, so they came back perfectly bilingual, or rather trilingual. That would be Spanish, English, and Korean. And when they did come back to Daddy's enterprise to work, they'd gotten business degrees at U.S. universities. So when they came back, they actually listened to my show for the very first time and heard what I was talking about. And soon enough, they called me in for a meeting. I knew the axe was going to fall. And here's what they said. Johnny, we like you. The people love you. You got good ratings. You got great sponsors. You can say everything and anything you want. You can even cut up on the Catholics. But lay off the evangelical Christians. And at that time, there was so much else to cut up on. I said, all right, I won't nail them, because I knew that their family was putting on more and more evangelical Christian programming, and there was no way for me to win that battle. Okay, flash forward a couple years. I'm working at another station, owned by a pompous-ass Criollo guy and his family. A Criollo, by the way, is a Latin guy who looks a lot like an Anglo-Saxon American or Northern European, because their parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, whatever, came over from the old country, Italy, France, Germany, Spain, wherever, and never intermarried with the Latino or indigenous locals. They just stuck to their own kind, keeping the bloodline kind of pure, so they remain looking white, even blonde or reddish-haired with blue eyes and green eyes, too. However, they're 100% Latins, classist, racist, womanizers, macho guys to the hilt, though always well-educated and big-time property and business owners. They're usually called the top 20 families, the top 20 that own 80% of everything. And believe it or not, some of these guys will trace their lineage all the way back to some Spanish or Portuguese royalty who gave their great-great-great-grandfather or grandmother a land grant, and that's why they first came over. That makes generation upon generation of classist, pompous, horses' asses. Anyway, I'll never forget one of the meetings we had at the station. All us radio announcers are sitting at a round table, listening to our pompous Criollo boss. He has a German name, by the way. He told us how all the radio stations in Latin America work. He said most stations break even or actually lose money for 3 years in a row. Then, in the fourth year, they just clean up. And that fourth year is when election times come. You see, that's when, like in the States, all the candidates bombard the airwaves, TV, radio, and newspapers, and spend millions in slick campaign ads. Down here in Latin America, they don't have election laws like they have in the States. I take that back. They do, but no one observes or enforces them, so it's as if there weren't any. Anyway, since there are always some front-running candidates who take big-time narco money under the table, you see millions and millions being spent. Often it seems like they've got bottomless pits of money. So anyway, he said firmly to us minor league radio personalities that he didn't want any of us saying anything negative or bad or controversial about the candidates, because the big money will soon be flowing in, and he wanted no candidate to feel his dough wasn't welcome at the station. Now, you might think that every media outlet, print, TV, radio, has its bias for a particular candidate. Well, down here in Latin America, remember, sometimes there are up to 100 frickin' candidates for mayor. And for president, maybe 10, even 15. That's a hell of a lot of advertising dough. And so the station manager said, we'll welcome all their ads and all their money, so we won't take sides or offend anyone. Is that understood? So did any of that stop me from hammering on those scumbag candidates? Nope. I toned it down a bit at first, but I came on strong later. And in reality, I was always fighting with this guy and his useless, pretentious kids, who, by the way, had do-nothing jobs in plush corner offices with fake titles on the door. Par for the course, huh? So eventually, I got in a real tussle with the boss, and he fired me and I quit at the same time. Now, you did hear me say that a lot of narco money goes into presidential races down here, especially. In fact, just reading a recent report from that International Investigative Commission called CICIG, that's CIGIG, the one that's been investigating corruption in Guatemala for the last 7 years, it said, in some cases, up to half of all the money donated to a presidential, congressional, or mayoral campaign comes from tainted, dodgy, or narco money. Though, normally, throughout Latin America, about 25% of campaign funds come from tainted money. So, there's always some powerful pressure group or business interest trying to buy their candidate into office. That way, they get all the political favors in the world once the guy gets in. What kind of favors, you might ask? Well, suppose a huge construction company, or huge car dealership, or appliance, or electronics store chain, a company that brings in millions and millions of dollars of imported goods every year. They might donate a couple million to a presidential campaign. And when their horse wins, suddenly they get an import tax exemption. Or maybe a 10-year tax holiday. Or better yet, what recently happened in Rio, Brazil, a $10 million contract went out to put security cameras on government buildings and street corners in certain intersections. And it turned out it was a no-bid contract. And when analyzed later, was determined that the contract was really only worth $5 million, and the other $5 million went right back into the coffers of the business that donated a couple of million to the presidential campaign. That's exactly how business is done in Latin America, because there's really no transparency. That said, don't think all of these systems are totally malignant. In fact, just lately everybody's been talking about Guatemala because they managed to toss out, even put on trial, some of the worst scumbag, pus-brained politicians in existence. Now, as far as the extent of narco money in presidential campaigns down here, ex-president Alvaro Colon, he was about three presidents ago in Guatemala, and by the way, his scumbag dragon lady ex-wife is in the running for president right now in Guatemala. Anyway, he said in an interview just a few weeks ago that, yes, all Latin American presidential candidates get dirty money, narco money. And when he answered that question, he looked at the journalist like, what a dumb question. You didn't know that? In fact, in his case, he said he may have taken 20 or 25% dirty money, but he wasn't in charge of collecting campaign contributions. He didn't know the figures. It's don't ask, don't tell until someone calls in a favor. So then how does that differ from U.S. presidential and congressional campaigns? Not a bit. Presidents and congressmen are bought and paid for too. They take huge corporate money and gifts from big corrupt twisted organizations like banks, insurance companies, oil companies, and drug companies. So when the horse they bought wins, they call in their favors too. Like, for example, Halliburton, who goes into war zones and cleans up after the U.S. has destroyed the place. I mean, you do know that U.S. servicemen out in the field in the Middle East get their laundry done by a contractor to the tune of $100 a bag? Now, I don't know what it costs up in the States to get your laundry done, but down here in Latin America, I could have a bag clean, starched, and pressed for $3 or $4. So you've got big corruption down here, and you've got big corruption where you live. What's the difference, really? Now, I don't want to digress here, so for all you listeners who've been sending emails wondering about how this grand presidential blowout in Guatemala is going to end. Now, to keep you up to date, the president and vice president are on trial for big-time corruption. They've been kicked out. There was a presidential election a couple weeks ago. Since no one candidate won decisively, there'll be a runoff election next month. Now, as in most Latin countries, for president, for example, they have an election, and if one candidate doesn't get 50% of the vote plus one vote, then they have a runoff between the two top contenders. Now, the reason why I'm bringing up the Guatemalan election again is because it's been all over the international news. Since something happened in Guatemala that's absolutely unprecedented in Latin politics. Now, traditionally in Latin America, it turns out almost always the guy who spends the most amount of money for the election campaign wins. Or at least gets in that runoff election where they run off the two top contenders. Now, as you know, the people in Guatemala are really, really, really fed up and pissed off about their electoral system and all the same name candidates and usual suspects. For that reason, I'm not an advocate of voting in any state or national election. What you're doing is giving a vote of confidence to a corrupt system. I believe the only place your vote counts is at the local and county level. However, in Latin America, people are addicted to voting for one reason. It's a free day and everybody gets free food and free handouts and free bus rides, so it's a huge party on election day. Kind of like Christmas all over again. I mean, you can go to any small town and see somebody handing out $10, $20, even $50 to buy someone's vote. Right out in the open, too. Again, like I said, there might be election rules against doing that kind of stuff, but man, I'll tell you, nobody's listening or paying attention. In fact, I've actually got photos of that stuff that I show at my expat wisdom seminars just to show people it's really happening. So anyway, when I get into any kind of discussion about politics with a local Latin person, it's futile because they're all used to voting for the lesser of 2, 3, or 10 thieving psychopaths. And they all love the day off and the free party and the stupid nationalism that goes along with it. And of course, they're not going to listen to a gringo about their election politics, except I do try to make it simple and drive one point home if I can. I tell them, if they'll listen, if you're going to vote, there's only two ways you're going to better the system. One is to vote nulo, which means for no one. That's N-U-L-O, and it's on the ballot. And they count those votes, you know. So in the end, if there's enough nulo votes, which are almost never enough, it would send a signal to politicians that they really have to change, but that's not going to happen. The second way you could make some kind of impact on the system is to vote for someone you've never, ever heard of before. Someone who's not entrenched in the system. Someone who's not connected and doesn't know anybody. Now, doing that, you might be pissing into the wind too, but at least it's someone who's not connected, at least not overtly, with all that crooked cronyism. And 99% of the time when I mention that option, Latins don't listen because they have their favorite candidate, the guy that's giving away things or promising stuff he'll never come through with, but people have really short memories. Except this one historic moment that's happening right now in Guatemala. In fact, it's really amazed everyone throughout the third world. And here's what's happened just lately since I gave that report on the elections just a couple weeks ago. Well, they had the presidential election and no one got that required 50% of the vote. So next month, there will be a runoff. And guess who's in the runoff? A guy who got 24% of the vote, a complete 100% unknown, who's never held a political office before in his life. He does not have a government job. He's not a big criollo coffee plantation or beer company owner, born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He's a guy with a business administration degree and a master's, a small business owner whose main hobby is acting and theater. A guy who occasionally goes on stage in comedies and plays a clown and such. That's why when people started putting his posters up around the country, and by the way, he had no TV or radio coverage because he was very short on funds and had no big powerhouse supporters. Anyway, when his posters came out, guess what? The other two traditional big money parties did a dirty deed. They sent out kids with spray guns to paint a clown nose on every one of his posters. So he looked like a jerk, a clown. In spite of that, he still won first place, 25% of the vote, and he spent a total of $200,000 on his campaign. All tiny little donations. And guess who came in second place? The ex-wife of the president I just mentioned, who did that interview just recently saying that almost all presidential candidates take at least 25% narco or dirty money for their campaign. Well, it figures that his horrid, two-faced, dragon lady ex-wife is running for president, and she came in second place. Guess how much she spent on her campaign? Around $5 million. Now, I know that doesn't sound like much when you're comparing it to U.S. campaigns, but she spent 25 times more, that's 2,500% more than the front runner, Jimmy Morales, coming in second place with about 19% of the vote. So it'll be Jimmy Morales and her in a runoff election next month. And she's attacking him in the press already. She's going on interviews saying he has zero experience in how to run a country. And the idiot interviewers and the media people are so stupid they don't have the correct comeback. I would say, well, that's exactly what you don't want in government. Experience, because all it is experience in knowing how to steal and manipulate people. That's the kind of experience you don't want. That would be a perfectly concise and pointed answer, but I've heard no one give that kind of response yet. Even that dark horse front-running candidate, Jimmy Morales, when asked that question by reporters and such, how are you going to run the country? You haven't got any experience. Even his handlers, if he's got any, haven't figured out how to properly answer that question. Well, it's simple. The last thing you want in government is an experienced politician, period. All right, so next month, those two candidates will be having a runoff. And hopefully, Jimmy Morales will be laughing all the way to the presidential palace. Because after all, he is a clown, right? But here's the topper. The third running candidate, who had just under 19% of the vote, a guy that won't be on the runoff next month, his name is Baldazón. By the way, a self-professed evangelical preacher, aren't they all, right? Anyway, it's been estimated that he spent $20 million on his presidential campaign. Now, since he got whooped, he's been in hiding, except to give one big interview where he looked scared, shaky, and overly medicated. Why, you might ask? Well, rumor has it, and it's been in the papers, that he's received more than 25% of his funding from big-time narcos. If you remember, I mentioned on a past show that he's the guy they caught plagiarizing his doctorate thesis. The guy's a real sociopathic scumbag. Perfect presidential material. Anyway, the word in the most knowledgeable circles is that he felt he was an absolute shoe-in for the presidency, since he outspent his nearest competitor by 400%. And history has shown that the people who do that always win. And of course, the narcos that supposedly funded his campaign figured he'd be a shoo-in too. And now he's nothing, not even in the runoff. And rumor has it, the narcos want their money back. So how's that going to happen? You know, narcos and mob types don't take losses. They get their money back and have a lot of collateral. So what's that collateral? Well, let's just say this guy Baldazan owns huge tracts of farmland and that evangelical man of God flies around with an entourage in a $5 million helicopter. Looks like he stands to lose all that and most probably will flee the country. How would you feel if you owed the mob or a cartel that kind of dough? Would you sleep tight and have sweet dreams? Or would you be on Prozac and packing your bug-out bag? Oh, and by the way, more good news on the Guatemalan election front. The socialist candidates got a kick in the teeth, too. You know, Latin America is just full of socialist candidates. And it's good news to hear that in Guatemala, the socialist candidates for president gained less than 2% of the vote. Now remember, socialist candidates in any third world Latin country have as a platform to align themselves with countries like Venezuela, Cuba, Ecuador, and Bolivia. And sometimes they throw in Uruguay, too. Not a club most people would want to belong to, that's for sure. Unless you've been brought up to live on government handouts and promises. Now, that's not to say that gringos and expats don't thrive well in those more socialistic countries. They do. But as for the locals, slowly but surely, you and I can watch with startling predictability the exact same dependency on handouts beginning to happen. And by the way, the only socialist countries in Latin America that sometimes, somehow, make good on their promises are the ones that have big oil. Socialist countries with huge oil reserves, like Venezuela, do provide a lot of social benefits at first, but then politicians will be politicians, and soon enough, they see how easy it is to enrich themselves, their friends, and their cronies until they've pretty much totally squandered their country's resources. Now, speaking of political promises politicians will never deliver on, listen to this. The headline here is, and I'm translating, taxi drivers in Colombia strike over Uber competition. Let me read excerpts of this. It says, taxi drivers across Colombia went on strike Wednesday to protest the app-based taxi booking service Uber. The strike coincided with protests by bus drivers, too. Authorities in Bogota, a city of 7 million with major congestion issues, announced commuters be on high alert because taxi drivers and buses will be blocking the roads. It says, Luis Romero, leader of the National Taxi Drivers Roundtable, said of the 52,000 taxis in Bogota, the capital, at least 10,000 are taking part in the strike, demanding they make the competition of Uber illegal because it offers taxi service using partners rather than employees as drivers, thus avoiding payment of health benefits and Colombian taxes, which makes the service much cheaper. Now, here's the key. Bogota's leftist administration said it was willing to mediate between the taxi drivers and the national government, trying to figure out how to severely regulate Uber. Then it ends by saying taxi drivers in other major Colombian cities like Medellin, Barranquilla, and Cartagena also announced similar protests in the near future. Now, regarding that, here's something I'm sure you never knew. During last year's Colombian presidential campaign, President Juan Manuel Santos and candidate Rafael Pardo and candidate Herman Vargas Lleras appeared at a campaign stop where they addressed over 10,000 government public service workers, including 1,000 unionized taxi drivers. At that meeting, each presidential candidate promised to remove or make illegal all smartphone apps that promote unlawful behavior and interference, citing companies like Uber, as well as similar competitive taxi services like Lyft, L-Y-F-T, Curb, and other unlawful non-union transportation competitors. To counter that, British expat businessman in Colombia, Paul Graham, said, services like Uber are so obviously a good thing that you can measure how corrupt a city is by just how hard they push to suppress it. Now, as for taxi service in Colombia, a lot of gringos and Europeans think they're reasonable, even cheap, compared to first world prices. What you didn't know is they pay an absurd percentage of taxes to the government. In fact, on weekends and holidays in big Colombian cities, the government adds an additional 30% surcharge, which of course is passed on to the customer. When, by the way, it says San Francisco-based Uber has clashed with established taxi union groups in several other cities where it operates, including London, Berlin, and Mexico City. But Bogota is the first city where protests have turned violent. It says Uber's fastest-growing areas are in crime-ridden capitals. According to a Washington, D.C.-based group called Inside Crime, Caracas, Venezuela, Bogota, Colombia, and Mexico City are the three most dangerous cities in which to take a taxi. As it turns out, Uber is attractive to security-conscious Colombians because the company checks that its drivers have clean criminal and driving records. And the app gives users the driver's photo, license plate, and phone number. For women who take taxis, there's a lot to be frightened of in Colombia. One taxi crime known as the Millionaire's Ride involves stopping the car to enable an armed person to enter, and they take you to an ATM machine and empty your bank accounts. Last year, for example, Colombia extradited 7 of their citizens to the U.S., accused of knifing to death a U.S. DEA agent in their country in a botched taxi robbery. Hey, wait a minute. Did that article say a DEA agent kidnapped, robbed, and then put out of his misery? I knew a few expats who would think that was progress. Oh, and by the way, I'm sure you didn't know that Bogota, Colombia has the most dangerous public transportation system in the world for women travelers, according to a poll conducted by Thomson Reuters Foundation, which goes a long way to explain why 60% or more of Uber's Colombian users are women. Now, the big reason why Colombian taxi drivers are pissed off is because they have to buy an official medallion like they use in New York City for around $40,000. In the end, one Cartagena woman Uber user says that she uses the service because it's eminently safe and they automatically calculate your fare ahead of time based on the GPS route. Whereas she said before Uber, she'd been ripped off many times in common scams such as rigged taxi meters, fake surcharges, concealed price tables, and pretending not to have change. The oldest one in the book. And by the way, I have to add, when people come to my expat wisdom seminars, I always recommend a completely legit and safe taxi service owned by none other than Captain Mango himself. So when people come to my seminars and take side trips or stay on for any reason at all, Captain Mango's taxi service gets my 100% seal of approval. Meaning, no need to use Uber in Guatemala. And by the way, I get no fee, kickback, or commission from the captain. Though he's always quick to treat me to a tequila and mango. So next time, Captain Mango, make it a double.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.